Hello, you're with Greg Ross on The Last Post Radio Show. It's a podcast series that you can download and listen to just as you would a TV show. Today we have Daniel Keane, famed Australian playwright. We're talking with Daniel about his poignant play, a one-woman play with Noni Hazelhurst, Mother, the state of the arts in Australia at the moment, and Daniel's general work. Daniel, hello, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for joining us here on The Last Post Radio Show podcast. Look, I guess you've been noted in the past for your character's emotional depth, I guess, in a social context, and the passion of the characters, which brings a lot of attention, I guess, a feeling of connection to the people that play your work. Has this always been the way for you? Is it something that you decided to do, or is it something that came naturally for you, getting this beautiful emotion out of your characters?
Well, it's just a natural thing, I think. It's almost not a decision that you can make. It's what drives the work, and that comes from a personal idea or commitment that theatre, especially theatre, I think, is a symposium for the emotions rather than the intellect, and that's what you have to, you know, create a situation where people can emotionally be involved.
Well said. I guess the great plays of the 20th century, and now as we go into the 21st century, have that common thread of bringing out emotions and getting the audience involved. I mean, you've won a lot of awards. We're not here to talk about awards specifically, but it's recognition of your great work. What started all this for you? Where did you get the 1979, I think it was, that you had your, is that right, your first play?
Probably, I can't remember, it's so far long ago. When I started working in the theatre, I worked, you know, at places like La Mama in Melbourne.
Yep,
and beautiful. I started working, worked as an actor, I tried directing things, I designed, these are very what people call fringe shows, or, you know, independent theatre work. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, it was clear that I wasn't a very good actor and I wasn't a very good director and I really wasn't very much of a designer either. So, but I wanted to keep working in the theatre. So I thought, well, perhaps I could try writing. So it was literally from working in the theatre in various roles in various capacities that I ended up writing for the theatre.
Amazing stuff. And so successfully too. What... In a general sense, your feeling about the arts in Australia at the moment, at this stage of the 21st century, is there enough recognition of the importance of the arts in everyday life? I mean, we tend to gloss over the arts, or not us, but a lot of governments in the past have done, and in the general community, perhaps a lack of recognition of the importance of arts. What is your feeling about that?
Oh, I think that's true. I mean, you've got to remember that more people go to cultural events than go to sport in Australia, but that is often something that's overlooked. So The arts are important to audiences here, but they're not so important to governments. And the arts, generally speaking, are critically underfunded in this country, and they always have been. And they're not, like, economically they're very important, but culturally or spiritually or intellectually or emotionally, they're critical to the community, and there has never been enough support of the arts in this country. And that things like, I mean, I've worked a lot in Europe and particularly in France, and the difference is extraordinary. The how culture is at the, or say the arts are at the center, somewhere near the center of French culture, but in here in Australia, they're right on the edges somewhere. And recognition, well, you know, there's a lot of talk about how important the arts are and how important storytellers are and how important artists are generally, but there's not a lot of action behind that talk.
Yeah, I mean, we could go into a lot of discussion, I guess, about the old world of Europe and the importance of arts being recognised from a long, long time ago. I guess we have had art in this country for a long time too, with the Indigenous art, but as far as the Anglo-Saxon idea of it goes, very, very important for an understanding of who we are in our role here in Australia. But yes, unfortunately, I think so. There does tend to be an underplay of the importance rather than an overplay. And perhaps we may look at electing more suitable people to Parliament to fix that up. The Keane Taylor Theatre Project, Patrick, Daniel, sorry, what's that all about?
Oh, that goes back a fair way. It's a few years ago now, but Ariette Taylor, who is a very well-known director here in Melbourne and had done lots of interesting work, I'd seen her work. We hadn't met, but she had contacted me and wanted to know whether I had anything that I wanted, any plays that I wanted to have performed. And I'd been messing about with writing short plays. Short plays, you know, something I'd say 20 minutes or 25 minutes. They're very hard to know what to do with them because you can't just do one 20-minute play. It doesn't kind of work like that. But I'd written a sequence of these plays, and essentially because I'd be grown tired of writing long full-length plays and all the kind of dramatic machinery that goes with them, and wanted to do something simpler and more direct. And I gave her a few of these short things, and she said, "Yeah, okay, let's do them." And we had no money, we had no support, we didn't have anything. We just contacted a few actors that we knew, and wonderful actors too: Malcolm Robertson, Helen Morse, Paul English, Dan Spielman, Robert Menzies, a whole lot of very good actors. And they said, "Yeah, let's do this." So then we had to find a space to do them in, and because we didn't have any money, we had to find something that was free. And so we went to the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, and they have a warehouse in Fitzroy, and we talked to the Archbishop, and we could have it for nothing, and do our work in there. But the thing is, it was full of furniture, and the Brotherhood gave away to people once a month. People would come in and take anything they wanted, like beds or couches or dining tables or wardrobes or whatever. And so we could work in the space, but we couldn't move anything out of it. So we had to just use what was in there. Like I say, there would be 10 wardrobes and 18 mattresses and 6 couches and 3 dining tables. And we sort of decided to make that the aesthetic of the company. So we just arranged these things in this space. And when we finally had audiences, they sat on couches, they sat on kitchen tables, they, you know, sat on kitchen chairs or on the floor. And we did these short plays in there. I think the first program was 3 short plays. And anyway, it went extremely well. So we ended up with people, you know, queued up around the block to get in, and we did quite a number of these seasons in the Brotherhood, and then we finally got some funding, and within a year we were at the Sydney Opera House. So
it was
quite an extraordinary sort of trajectory.
Wow.
But yeah, we went for about 5 years. We did, you know, like 14 seasons of work, and it was a fabulous time. It was also completely exhausting, and the project finished for me anyway, because I literally was exhausted. I couldn't do it anymore.
Jeez. So these were all short or shortish plays, Daniel?
Yeah, within the period of the company, we did 3 full-length plays.
Mm.
One was at the Malthouse, which was then called the Playbox. One during the Melbourne Festival, and one during the Sydney Festival. But, mainly short pieces, yeah.
Good on you. So these short plays, I mean, I guess, are they flow of consciousness, Daniel? Is that how you do a short play?
No, they're various kinds. A couple of them are one person, like just monologue, somebody basically telling a story. Others are couples or a family group or two guys, you know, like they have stories, they have narratives, they have situations, they have scenes. In a sense, they're exactly the same as a full length play, except they're condensed, and you're having a look at a certain moment in a story, if you know what I mean.
I do, yeah. Maybe a poetry of plays. That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I suppose that brings us to something quite extraordinary and acclaimed in itself. Mother with Noni Hazelhurst. How important is this play right now, Daniel? I mean, we've been doing the magazine and the podcast series, been doing a lot of looking at the housing crisis, and because of that, the homeless situation. How important is the play, and what gave you the oomph to write this?
I think the play is unfortunately very relevant. Because it looks at this aging woman who lives on the street and looks at how that happened. What's the story of her life? How did she end up in this predicament, this situation? The play came about because Noni asked me to write something for her because she hadn't done a one person play and she wanted to. So she asked me whether I'd be interested in writing something for her. And we sat down and had a few chats. And what we ended up talking about was people who fall through the cracks, you know, what happens to people when they kind of disappear from, well, they sort of literally disappear off the face of the earth. Where do they go? What happens to them when they've got nothing? They've got nowhere to go. They've got no one to look after them. They've got nowhere to turn. Or they feel that they don't. So that was the kind of subject, somebody who'd fallen through the cracks, and what was the story? How did that happen? And, you know, just trying to, instead of talking about statistics, talk about this very human story, something that people could relate to, that that Noni related to because she was the one who had to perform it. So all of the discussions I had with her, you know, led to the writing of this piece.
It's quite strangely beautiful in its own way. Look, I guess we're both Australians. We live in Australia. We observe. And I don't know if there's a really serious way, this may also be relevant to what we were speaking about before about the arts, if there's really a relevant and strong urge for governments to deal with the homeless situation and those that are left, as you say, falling through the cracks. Is this because Australians with the gung-ho attitude, like the feeling of victims to blame, I think, and also that not wanting to look at the truth of the matter, because, of course, I did speak to someone involved in the housing industry, and the admittance there was that the truth of this is a lot deeper than the headlines would suggest.
Yeah. I think that this idea of not wanting to look at the truth is the kind of problem this culture has anyway, generally speaking. If you think about history and various things that won't be looked at, or are denied. I mean, every country has the same problem, I guess, but, you know, that's sometimes very difficult to look your history in the face and say, yes, that's what happened, that was wrong, or that has to be corrected, or whatever. But I think we have a real problem with looking things square in the face and facing up to them. I mean, you know, it doesn't, I mean, if you think of the housing thing, the homeless people during COVID, when, you know, unemployment benefits were raised, places were found for people. So that's, you right. go, well, it's possible. So why isn't it being done?
Well, that's, you know, right.
Like, it's not like it's impossible. It is completely possible. But as soon as the COVID crisis past, all of that was, no, we go back to the way it was, which was condemning people to poverty and to homelessness all over again. But the problem had been solved very briefly, and then everything had to return to normal, which was despair and poverty and loneliness. And you go, well,
separation.
Why? Yeah.
Yeah. Well said. Similar thoughts went through my mind during the period. And of course, we did have a moment of optimism where people thought that this would change us for the better. But the deep-rooted profit in anxiety, let's say, returned to the norm. And as you say, everything went back to, an inverted commas, normal. Except I think that you and I are discussing it, so perhaps not to a degree, but not at this stage enough to warrant change. So I guess, yeah, geez, you live in hope, but it may be, I guess, the failure to look at the truth is an Australian way of dealing with things in many ways. It's the chin up, you know, get on with your work type of attitude. So yeah, incredible. But anyhow, I mean, back to your work, but there's a lyricism, I guess, about your work that I noted, a poetry of sorts, that I used that word before, because people tend to hang on every line, which is a brilliant thing, particularly when you've got a one-woman play like Noni and Mother. There is a wanting for this to resolve itself, and that's a beautiful part of your work. I guess that tenderness and loneliness in the character, did you feel that evolving when you were writing it? Did you become personally involved in this? I guess there's no way around not doing so, but how did you feel about the character as you're writing the character?
Well, I mean, it's true whenever you write anything, if it's going well, you become completely involved with the character, and they become, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that character, Christy, is a real person. And so when I'm writing the character, she's terribly real to me. And that I, because this thing about every line, about poetry and all that sort of stuff, is that, you know, when I'm writing, I'm very, very aware of the what I'm writing is meant to be spoken.
Yes.
And that people are going to hear it.
Yes.
So it's not like writing a piece of prose or a novel or a short story or a poem even. But, you know, even though poetry originally is an oral art, I mean, there was poetry before there was writing. So that, yeah, it's to be heard. So that determines, to a very large degree, the kind of language I use, because I know that the words have to hang in the air. They have to, people, you can't turn back the page and read them again. You only hear them once.
That's
right. So they have to stick, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, well said, well said. And of course, with the beauty or otherwise of memory, in inverted commas again, you don't want someone thinking, now, what did she say? Or perhaps after the play, they might say, oh, remember this line in the play? And they go, no, she didn't say that. She said something else. That opens itself to discussion too. So that's a beautiful part of what you do also. That's incredible. Boy, oh boy.
Yeah, of course. I mean, theatre is ephemeral. You know, it's there, you know, it only happens when you're sitting in the audience watching it. And then once you leave, that's it. It's finished. And of course, people remember different things. It's quite funny, actually, what people remember about pieces, and how memories differ, and what do people remember and what do they forget? I mean, but that's all part of the art, actually.
That's right. Theatres are beautiful places too, Daniel, as escape, and then, but not only escape, but perhaps a view into realism or reality at the same time.
Yeah, it can be both.
Yeah, wonderful stuff. Daniel Keane, award-winning playwright, work that you've done over the years, and of course now showing Arts Centre Melbourne, Noni Hazlehurst with Mother, A Look at Homelessness, that poignant story of the woman. Thank you very much for your time. It's much appreciated on the Last Post Radio Show podcast series. And we look forward to further chats and further insight into your brilliance. And thank you for being part of it.
Thank you very much for having me.
And coming up next, we speak with Dave Cox, who is using creativity to help veterans in Veterans for Guitars. This is Greg Ross on the Last Post Radio Show podcast series.